Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica and Mitch Albom.
I'm Mike Lupica of the New York Daily News and MLB.com.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and this is The Sports Reporters Podcast, the podcast incarnation of the long-running Sunday morning TV show on ESPN, which was always a trio plus a host. Today we're doing duo. This is the nice thing about the podcast world. You can flex. Sometimes you have a quad.
It's a flex schedule. It's like the flex schedule in the NFL.
Right, that's right. Sometimes Sunday afternoon is Sunday night, and sometimes it's Thursday. But we do the program Mondays and Thursdays. And if you're joining us for the first time, welcome. We're glad to have you along. If you're a regular, always glad to have you back. And it's wonderful to have days like this where, literally hours ago, something happened, and you have an outlet to talk about it. And what we witnessed in Chavez Ravine, on a day really that I think historically is going to go down as one of the most monumental and surprising days in the history of playoff baseball. And certainly we'll get to the 10-run first inning of the St. Louis Cardinals. But the fact that that's the second story only goes to show you that the 106-win Los Angeles Dodgers, who were cruising along with a 3-0 lead and the party was about to start in Los Angeles, brought in arguably the best or second best pitcher of the last 10 years as a reliever. And by the time Clayton Kershaw was sitting by himself at the end of that bench, Mike Lupica, this whole narrative had changed.
You know, Mitch, I was talking to a friend of mine. I was talking to Costas about this and the spectacle over two nights of having 213 regular season wins on the line, like chips pushed to the middle of the table. 106 for the Dodgers. The Astros have 107 on the line on Thursday night. But this, to me, was stunning, because everything they had wanted to happen through seven, Mitch, had happened. You've talked all year. We love Walker Buehler. I mean, he's just a great young pitcher, totally up to the circumstances of the occasion. And then when he finally pulled him, and Kershaw comes in to get Adam Eaton with a nasty breaking ball to get them through the seventh, you think, okay, things are set up. But it was clear that Dave Roberts was bound and determined to pitch Kershaw past Adam Eaton. And when it happened, Mitch, it happened in the space of about 5 minutes. And yep. He didn't get beat up by two tomato cans, Mitch. He got beat up by two of the best players in baseball. Rendon, Soto is 20 years old and a joy to watch play this game. Doesn't matter whether you're a left-hander or a right-hander. And once it was 3-3, but Mitch, then it gets worse. Then it gets worse, even after Kershaw is out of the game, okay? Because what you've got to do is pitch Maeda, okay? After that, only he does it. And he pitches Joe Kelly. He should have had Maeda in to pitch the eighth inning. That's a great second guess, but I haven't had a lot of confidence in Clayton Kershaw. And then for him to leave Joe Kelly, and anybody who watches a lot of Boston Red Sox games, Mitch, there was nothing surprising about what happened in the 10th, because once you got a clean inning from him, get him the hell out of there. And whether you've lost confidence in Kenley Jansen or not, Mitch, get him into the game.
Well, this, Mike, speaks to a larger issue about playoff baseball. If Bob Ryan were with us, I'm sure he'd be pulling out all of his hair over the overthinking and we got to do something different in the postseason, managing of pitchers in the late innings. And his argument, Robert's argument was, well, Kelly's my most rested reliever.
Oh, God.
And he's only thrown 10 pitches. Well, he's rested because the last time he was in a game, he was awful.
Yeah.
And so maybe you go back to that. Maybe you go to the fact that there was some kind of injury he was dealing with before. But if you can't, if you make the wrong move, I agree with you, it's a wrong move bringing him in the first place. Don't compound it by leaving him there when he's losing guys who he has 0-2 counts on.
That's
he's
the thing.
Losing yep. guys. That tells you something. When you've got him in 0-2 and you can't close him out, that tells you something. And he's walking a guy, and then he's letting a guy go to 0-2 and then on a 2-2 pitch. He said, so how many opportunities did he have? I mean, Mike, he was still in there after the Grand Slam. You know, I don't know if that's what we surrender. What's the point of wasting another pitch?
Mitch, did you not, watching him stay in there, think to yourself, does Dave Roberts know they don't have any more games after this if they lose? Right. Mitch, it looked like he thought it was a 7-game series. Oh, well, yeah. Okay, I'll just we'll leave him out there.
This one's in the books. We'll come back and get him tomorrow.
You don't have any more games, Dave. This is it. And once that ball goes over the fence, this is as stunning an ending to a great regular season. There have been others, and we have cataloged them all the way back to when the Mariners won 116 and couldn't get by the Yankees. But for a team that lost the last two World Series, that rolled the National League this year, that thought it was its destiny to finally win the World Series. Let's stop right here and put this on the table, Mitch. And I like this guy a lot, and I'm in touch with him a lot during the regular season. Do you believe that Dave Roberts, despite his record there, is now in a precarious state at Dodger Stadium?
Well, okay. He's not in a precarious state for his body of work. His body of work is excellent. Where he's in a precarious state is, does he have the team behind him next year?
And the fan base. And that matters too, Mitch.
Yeah, and the fan base. Although, you know, look, it can't get any worse than it is now. So either they fire him as a sacrificial offering to the fans to try to get them to calm down, or they come back next year. And you know, the fact is, every year with the Dodgers in spring, you have every reason to be excited because they're rich, they're young, they're talent thick.
Well run.
And so you're going to believe. So by spring, if he's not gone by spring, then what's the point? But I, more than the fans, Mike, because I think the fans eventually, look, they've managed to get over two World Series losses. The Buffalo Bills fans were still there when they came around the fourth time for a Super Bowl and still got beaten. But the team, Mike, the team, you know, they remember those kinds of moves. And it are the players, that's where I don't know. I can't read. I'm not the GM of the Dodgers. If the players have his back, if the players feel it was a one brain dead game decision and still he's their manager, then I don't think you have to lose him. I mean, you know, anyone else coming in there is going to bring some kind of baggage with them as well. But there are other issues here, Mike. What about Clayton Kershaw? When Clayton Kershaw was sitting by himself,
oh my God,
on that bench, and boy, did they leave that camera on him for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, you thought he had crawled out of that hole of postseason failure. And then he's now, I mean, this is what people are going to remember. They're going to remember that shot. They're going to remember him sitting there by himself. And my question to you, and I ask you this in light of the conversation we had a couple days ago about Justin Verlander, which did not work out, obviously, for Houston. This whole idea of starters as relievers, is it maybe time to rethink just how clever that is in
the
postseason?
I'll tell you why. No, because just because Kershaw failed last night, look what Patrick Corbin did for the Nationals last night. Look what Max Scherzer has done out of the bullpen in this series. The Red Sox can't win the World Series last year if their best relievers aren't their starters. Price, Eovaldi, Porcello, on and on and on. And the year before, A.J. Hinch had established a template by using his. No, I think it's a great idea. And Exhibit A, if Exhibit A is Kershaw, how it can go wrong, look at the way Patrick Corbin pitched last night after he had pitched terribly in relief. No, I actually think it's a good thing, especially the way relievers get ground down now during the regular season. Clayton Kershaw is just on the back nine. But, Mitch, at some point you have to say, okay, his earned run average is like two runs higher in the postseason than it is during the regular season. I'll give you one more. The Dodgers would have won the 2017 World Series if Clayton Kershaw had been able, the game that ended up 13-12 or whatever it ended up in game five, okay? He had a 4-run lead. And that night, everybody was coming up with these stats where, you know, his record was like 97-4 when he'd been given a 4-run lead. He couldn't hold the lead. They lost that game. They ended up losing in 7 games. I'm telling you, even when they re-upped him, Mitch, we talked about this at the time. It was like it was a life achievement award, this new contract, because it has been a long time since you really looked at him. And he's getting by on cantaloupes and melons a lot of the time, okay? Yeah. Where you look at him and say, yeah, that's an overpowering pitcher. Not for a long time. And again,
two home runs, Mike, on 289-mile-an-hour.
I mean, Soto looked. Did you see Soto's eyes as he hit that ball? Yeah. Come to Papa.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Look, we can replay these games, and it's all easy to do it the next day, and Dave Roberts doesn't have that option. But you bring Kershaw in to close out, and he gets that strike. Maybe he's done. You know, thank you. Now we're going to move back to our rotation. Like you said, he seemed to already have made his mind up. Okay, my best reliever is Clayton Kershaw
right here.
And I think that was his fatal mistake. He got the timely strikeout and the momentum that it carried. Maybe you ride that and you say thank you. But there's almost this thing like, well, I can't use Clayton Kershaw for one batter. I mean, you know, he's Clayton Kershaw.
Kershaw.
I saw somebody wrote a piece, and I thought it was very much, if he didn't have the name Kershaw on his back, would he have used him? Would he have brought him back out there for the next inning?
No, but Mitch, you just said it. He had clearly made up his mind that once he got him into the game, he was going to ride him as long as he possibly could. And it was like, you know, it's like the old Marx Brothers line. Who are you going to believe, me or your own lying eyes?
Right.
Okay. Roberts
is that the
seen
Marx Brothers?
Him.
I thought that was country music.
No, you know what? I looked it up one time. I was curious. Okay. I think it's from Duck Soup. Yeah, okay. But he's clearly seen him, okay? And fresh in Roberts's October memory is who got the last 3 outs of the last World Series with nasty breaking balls? Chris Sale of the Boston Red Sox. He struck out the side in the 9th inning of Game 5. And I guess Dave thought that he was going to get that out of Clayton Kershaw, but he didn't. And Mitch, again, it's a second guess, but if and Tyler Brewer, our producer, he loves the Dodgers. Maeda has to pitch the 8th inning. When he finally got in, you saw what he did.
Right.
He was filthy. And then it just devolved from there. And this
okay,
is
now let's throw over to the other side, because there's something, if people are listening to us in Washington, D.C., they have every right to say, well, how about the team that won? Let's not forget, because Mike, you've been quick to point this out throughout the season as the Nationals have risen to this occasion. After 19-31, which was their start, their record was the same as the Dodgers. So anyone who is shocked at, wait a minute, the 106-win Dodgers. Well, yeah, the 106-win Dodgers began on opening day hitting home runs and started accumulating their victories right from the first day of the gate. It was 50 games into the season before the Nationals found their feet. But who cares? You know,
It doesn't matter.
How you're playing at the end. And the fact is, these were evenly matched teams if you look at their records. And you could argue the Nationals were on a hotter run because of where they came from when they got to the postseason. And it's clear Steven Strasburg did what he had to do. Max Scherzer twice did what he had to do. I half thought he was going to get into that game. I watched him on the bench moving back and forth. I said, if Max Scherzer gets into this game 7 after what he did, you know, now I've seen everything. But as it turned out, they didn't need him. And, you know, you cannot deny, Mike, they're in Chavez Ravine with all the tradition against the Dodgers. They're down. I mean, look at the way the game began with a home run that wasn't a home run, that got hit in the fence. And you think, okay, we got a break here, you know, got caught in the door of the fence. It's a ground rule double. And then, boom, a home run knocks the guy in anyhow. And you're down 2-0, and now you're down 3-0. And they came back from that, came back against Clayton Kershaw, came back from 3-0, and then with a guy who used to play for the Dodgers, Howie Kendrick, a couple of years ago. Sorry, Tyler, I keep rubbing this stuff in, it's a novel. It's an amazing story, and you cannot discredit what the Nationals did, especially with 0-2 counts and coming back, and they deserve this. This was not just a Dodger failure story. This was a Nationals continuing an amazing amazing rise from 19 wins and 31 losses. And who knows how far it's going to go now?
Mitch, here's what I've been thinking the last week or so, okay? And when you talk about the Nationals had to be grinding from 50 games on. They're 12 games under 500. They play the rest of the season 74 and 38 after they were 19 and 31. And you know what? Every game felt like a big game. You know who started playing big games this week? The Astros and the Dodgers. You know who started playing urgent games this week? The Astros and the Dodgers. And there's a certain muscle memory, and we're seeing it from the Rays for teams who have been on the grind for months. Okay, the Rays are grinding into the last week of the regular season just to get into the wild card game to beat out the Cleveland Indians. And I'll tell you something else, Mitch. I was thinking about this. Yes, it's easy to belt away at Dave Roberts today. The MVP of the National League didn't do very much to save his team. Okay, it's like an old line I heard from F. Lee Bailey when he was discussing this accused killer, and the guy finally said to him, "Lee, I just want you to know I didn't kill my wife." And Bailey said, "Yeah, but let's face it, Carl, you didn't do very much to keep her alive either." Right. Okay. Right. 211, no home runs, no RBIs across five games. And Mitch, he had plenty of big at-bats in the late innings. And you know who finally saved him? The kid Will Smith. Because I thought when he hit that ball in the ninth, I thought it was out.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could go back to game two when they lost 4-2 when they were at home, and Kershaw again and Strasburg and Scherzer. That might have been the turning point there. You know, a five-game series has to be analyzed in hindsight of all five games.
Yep.
But obviously, to lose the last two, 6-1 and 7-3, is you know, going to haunt the Dodgers.
Oh, my God.
The Nationals are a great story. And we'll be talking about the Dodgers for a long time. What's going to happen to them next.
Now, are the Cardinals.
Yes, let's flip over to this. Is this, look, you and I have covered a lot of baseball between the two of us. Sometimes you just get games like this where it's like, okay. But having said that, all right, there was a moment when they were down, well, I think it was just one run, right? I think it was one to nothing when Freddie Freeman has the opportunity to turn a double play and doesn't make it. And then the floodgates open. Now, can you blame him for nine more runs scoring in that inning? No, but those are the kind of things when you analyze it that you don't shut the door. You don't, as Bill Laimbeer once said, you don't chop off the head of the snake with a scythe. You got to kill when you get the chance to kill in postseason action of any sport. And you have a chance to get out of a rough inning, which clearly, you know, the Braves starter was not ready for prime time. I mean, it was 4-0. But I think the stats of that inning, Mike, are mind blowing. That they scored. I mean, no home runs. 10 runs, no home runs. A guy was lifted for, I forget who it was lifted for defensive purposes after batting in the first inning.
They put Harrison Bader in the game.
We're going to defend a 10-0 lead. You don't need more offense. So I've never, ever seen anything like that. But it could have turned on that play. And Freeman afterwards was asked, and he said, "This is all on me." And so baseball players understand the karma of what happens when you leave a door open.
Yeah, but you know what? I was thinking when Freeman said that, and I had the same thought you had watching the game. I do recall the line after the Bears beat the Redskins 73-0 in the 1940 NFL Championship game. There was a drop ball early in the game, and somebody said to Sammy Baugh, the Redskins caravan, "Do you think things would have been different?" And he said, "Yeah, it would have been 73-6. Okay. Yeah. And so every time we go to a big game in sports, whether we're attending or watching, we think to ourselves, I know you think the same way because we talked about this, I may see something today I never saw before. And we saw a 10-run first inning. It made me think of my Little League coaching days. I thought they were going to invoke the slaughter rule and just send everybody home, Mitch. But I'll tell you what, though. Here's another example. The Cardinals, about 20 seconds ago, it was like match point against them in game four at home. Yadi ties the game. Yadi wins the game with a sacrifice fly. And again, there may be something to having to be on the edge. The Cardinals had to grind their way through September. They were no lock to win the division, and if they didn't win the division, they could have gone into the wild card mix. And right. Mitch, it's like a theme of today. Maybe the teams that have played big games for months
right.
do have a certain edge at this time of year.
Right, and maybe amassing 100-plus victories and running away with your division is not the best training for postseason readiness. Now, there's no alternative to it. You're not going to lose games on purpose right, to keep it
right.
close.
Right.
But, you know, look, it's the same thing that happened with the when the Tigers played, of all teams, the Cardinals, back in the last World Series that they were in. And they were so good that they got done with the first, you know, the American League rounds and then sat around for a week while the American teams battled it out. And by the time they got back to playing in the World Series, they had kind of lost,
it happened
say,
twice
the muscle
to
memory.
Them, Mitch.
Yeah.
Mitch, it happened twice to the Tigers.
Yeah.
It happened against the Giants another time.
You want to say, you know, go to seven games. It's almost the best thing that can happen to
yep.
you. But what are you going to do? You're not going to tell a team to intentionally lose. So they're you know, caught between a rock and a hard place. But you're right. We got a theme going here, with the exception of the Yankees, who obviously they just need the Minnesota Twins and all is well for them.
All is good, you know, yes.
But these other teams, including now, you know, we're going to see what happens, obviously, with Houston. But if Houston goes out, Atlanta goes out, and the Dodgers go out, you've got a theme. You've got more than a theme. You've got a headline story of, you know, obviously the regular season and big, big win numbers is not combat training. And I don't know what you do, how you compensate for it, but it's something to be aware of when you start picking favorites in these things. And Mike, we've seen it in football. We've seen it in basketball. Hot teams, who finishes strong. It's so much about how you're playing at the moment and not. And I really think that they carried that game for when Molina, you know, carried them with those two. He himself hadn't been having a great game
up till then.
And then all of a sudden it turns and then boom, you carry that in. And again, on the road. You know, on the road, and you go and do something like this, which was just, it was over so fast. I don't know, maybe a mercy killing like that is better than what happened to the Dodgers. That's an interesting question. Which was more merciful for the fans of either the Braves or the Dodgers? The way St. Louis beat them, or a 10th inning grand slam?
No, because it was more cruel the way the Dodgers lost.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess maybe having it over early.
I know my answer.
Yeah, what is it, Tyler? I think
would you rather have been able?
Watching Howie Kendrick, a former Dodger, hit a slam off you in the 10th off of Kelly, who has been up and down all year. Yeah, that's pretty heartbreaking.
All right, wait a minute.
I guess our question is answered. Okay.
All right. Let me ask you this, Tyler Brewer, because we talk a lot. Tyler and I talk a lot. We talk a lot about the Dodgers. Okay. Do you want Dave Roberts back?
I think it's time for a change.
Because there's some pretty good guys out there.
There are. I like Madden sitting out there, California guy.
Buck Showalter,
who's one of our favorites. Yeah, I mean, Roberts has a tendency to have bad pitching.
I was thinking about the Ryan Madsen decision last year that kind of turned another bad relief pitcher decision. Go back to the grief counselors. Okay.
Thank you.
Because Mitch and I are paid. All right. Mitch, obviously, this is our weekend podcast, so people are going to be listening to this after tonight's game. It's just going to be very interesting. The Rays, again, they've played three deciding games already. Game three, game four, the wild card game. I was there the other day. I was just reminded all over again, forget about what the payroll is. Forget about what the attendance is. This is as tough an out as there is in baseball. And again, they've been playing big games for a while. The Astros, Mitch, didn't have to win a game, or felt like they didn't have to win a game until game four. Obviously, they have the pitching edge, but I'll tell you something, and who knows, you know, again, people are going to be hearing this after the game has been played. This kid, Tyler Glasnow, who's starting for the Rays, is pretty damn good.
Well, the Rays pitching is just really, really tough to get through. And it proves in postseason baseball, that's what matters. Now, we had a spirited discussion a couple days ago about whether Justin Verlander was the right move, and you know how I felt, and what I feared is exactly what happened to Justin Verlander. And you took a thoroughbred out of his rotation and out of his norm, and he was not the thoroughbred anymore. And now they're down. Well, you know, they got Garrett Cole, and they always had Garrett Cole. And you could argue, well, so if they lost that game with a weak fourth starter, now they'd have Justin, they'd have Justin Verlander and Garrett Cole for today's game. But again, you know, coming in relief, look at how it worked for Clayton Kershaw. So whether it's the end of the world or not, what they tried with Justin Verlander, they still got a pretty damn good pitcher going to the mound. But they're going up against a team that is not just house money, Mike. I mean, they're giddy. Yeah. With what they've done,
but they're
already
going into the best home field advantage in baseball. And here's the thing about Verlander, Mitch. And by the way, I'll die on that hill. I still think it was the right decision because guess what? There's a fallacy of predetermined outcomes in baseball. So they send the kid Urquidy out and they lose game four anyway. Okay. There's no guarantee that Verlander on full rest is going to pitch any better. And by the way, a year ago in game five against the Red Sox, Justin Verlander, still the best pitcher in the world then, pitching on full rest, he pitched slightly longer in that game, but gave up four runs, and the Astros not only lost, but lost their season. So you just never know. And you never know how he would have responded having an extra day of rest, which is what he would have had if he had pitched game five. And so it has set up a scenario where Hinch always knew he had Garrett Cole in his back pocket. And if they do win this game, he still goes with Greinke in game one of the ALCS, Verlander in game two. He'd have Cole and Verlander set up for game six and seven. So everything works out well, Mitch, except they got to do one kind of important thing.
Win a game.
They need to win the game.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of ranks up there.
But the Rays are a wonder. Mitch, they are, I'm telling you, I know Kevin Cash a little. He was with the Yankees for a while. What they've done, again, you can't stress this enough, with the lowest payroll in the entire sport. This does not happen in the NBA. This does not happen in the NFL. It doesn't even happen in the, Mitch, you know, you follow hockey closely. Yeah. There is never this kind of payroll disparity. And here they are. I wrote a column about this yesterday for MLB.com. This is one of the biggest games in the history of this franchise.
Oh, no question.
They haven't played a game like this since game five against the Texas Rangers in 2010 when they had to go up against Cliff Lee. Now, this, to get three game, Mitch, in the space of what, 30 hours to get three game fives, it's why we love baseball in October.
And talking about battle ready, if the Rays win this game tonight, yep, they will have won four elimination games in 9 days.
9 days.
They've already won three, which means this isn't going to scare them. And this kind of adrenaline, the kind of we can do anything sort of thing, don't count us out, combined with what they've just witnessed yesterday if they were sitting around watching television. It's like, why not us? We've got two teams that went into the opposing stadiums and walked out with unlikely game five victories. Why not us? Everything is setting itself up for them. At four elimination games in 9 days, I don't know how far you're going to have to go back to find some team that does that. So from a story point of view, from a history point of view, I'd love to see them win the game, but I don't want to see them win the game for the baseball that comes after it, because we've already been robbed of Los Angeles, who I would have loved to have seen get back to a World Series. We've already, St. Louis and Atlanta. St. Louis is, like we've talked about, their royalty. They're going to be back. Both of those teams are going to be back again in the future. They just always are. But to have Tampa Bay against the Yankees and, a Nationals Cardinals series isn't exactly the postseason that we were hoping for when we had the heavy ones.
Yeah, no, so. I think if you're a baseball fan, before we move on to the NBA's travails on the other side of the world, you kind of want to see the Astros and the Yankees slug. Nothing against the Rays. I kind of would like to see the Astros. All right, listen, before we move on to the NBA and then college football and then a brief discussion about this weekend's games in the NFL, we just want to remind you our fine sponsor from Kronos. Kronos knows that many organizations maintaining a modern workforce of hourly, full, and part-time workers, for them, it can be a challenge. This is especially true for human resources professionals working hard to attract and retain all the best talent. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping on a single cloud-based platform. It's one specially designed to give HR professionals supporting a blended workforce a whole new level of confidence. With it, they have everything they need to tackle nearly any human resources challenge and are empowered to not just find and hire the right people, but to engage, motivate, and reward them every single step of the way. Learn more about Kronos HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them, because Kronos is at heart a people business, at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. All right, Mr. Album, it's not like things have gotten any better for the NBA over in with the place our president calls China, but they're getting worse. They played these games, no press availability. This whole thing has become a lack of a better expression, a spit show.
Well, it may be time for Adam Silver to call the owners together and say, how are we going to be remembered from here on in? Because we all have enough money. Every one of you has enough money. The league has enough money. This notion of global domination everywhere it comes now with a price. How interesting. You know, when you're trying to expand to Spain or England or places, you're not going to run into this. But when you're going to, and I've witnessed this, Mike, in other parts of my life, with businesses that can't wait to get into China. They just, you know, because it's just this massive marketplace, so much money to be had. I mentioned on Tuesday's show about how much money Nike is making in China right now. And the NBA, like so many other big multinational corporation businesses, just can't stop salivating at the potential for money because of all the people there are in China. And the game that just finished up, as we are now broadcasting, between the Lakers and the Nets, the
who
audience
won, Mitch, who won? Who won the game?
I don't care, and I'm not even bothering to report it. I just know it's over. I saw some of the tape from it, and read the reports of it, and they said that, you know, the fans were going nuts with every dunk, and the fans were yelling MVP for LeBron, and they clearly, you know, the genie's out of the bottle a little bit there in China too, because they love the NBA. But at what cost? At what cost? If you are going to now send out James Harden to do a ridiculous apology that was 5 minutes from a hostage tape, that's basically what it looked like.
It was weird.
It was strange. It was weird. All that was missing was him holding up a newspaper with the date on it, you know, and a blindfold over him. And then to have Adam Silver's comments about, you know, which were couched about, you know, being apologetic and we want to be educated on these issues and all the rest of it. Although I thought he took a somewhat stronger stand the next day, not as strong as I would like to see. Then to have all these players muted over there, the press conferences were canceled. Adam Silver's press conference was canceled. Okay. Now he's the commissioner of the league and he's allowing China to say there's not going to be any press availability. They didn't want, I'm sure Nike was very pleased not to have LeBron James have to be asked about this, because LeBron James is going to have to face his history about I speak up for injustice. Well, is it just for college athletes getting paid, or are you going to actually point it out when you're talking about people who are going to be extradited from their own country to face a judge someplace else when that question is being asked? And at some point, they're going to come home here, Mike. They are going to come home from China, and they're going to get asked questions. And are they all supposed to now have tape over their mouths? So I go back to what I said at the beginning, and I ask you, is there a point at which the NBA needs to say, you know what, we're pretty big as we are. We got a lot of money already.
We're not going to get pushed around. We're not going to be pushed around by, you know, one of the worst human rights records on the planet. We're just not going to be bullied by state-run television. And the thought, Mitch, how many times are we talking about this? When a player will go to another team for a money that won't change a single day of the rest of his life. Are we going to have, what you just said is true. Are we going to have to run a going out of business sale for Adam Silver if he loses China here? And by the way, you don't think there'll be some hue and cry from the basketball fans of China if their NBA gets taken away from them?
Right.
It's become an extremely popular sport. But, and I have to tell you, I'm a great admirer of Steve Kerr, okay? But how weak did his answer? I'm still researching it. Oh, really, Steve? Really? No, he's afraid to say something that's going to piss off his boss, that's going to piss off his commissioner, and he it was quite amazing to watch him basically hide under the desk when he got asked a question about this issue. But you know, now we're hearing all this stuff. ESPN doesn't want it's on air people talking about the politics of the situation. Mitch, we sat together for a long time on Sunday mornings. Now we're happily doing this podcast, okay? We used to laugh at the notion that the Olympics aren't political. Of course they're political. Right. It's political from the time it becomes a show for the rest of the world about the home country. Idea that people are going to run away from this is a bit disingenuous, but you're right. What's LeBron going to say when are people going to stop asking him questions? No, the more he doesn't answer it, the more they're going to ask.
You can't be a country that celebrates the two guys in 1968 raising their fists and speaking out for black rights. You can't be a country that celebrates Jesse Owens drawing his own line to a long jump so that Hitler's cronies can't call him foul. You can't celebrate people standing up to bullies. You can't celebrate the NFL players taking a knee and having the right to do so and bragging about you, how you in your league, you don't have those issues because we respect players' rights to express their opinions. Not to mention they conveniently had a rule where you can just stay in the locker room. But they've been talking about how, you know, from LeBron to Silver to everybody talking about how they stand up when they see injustice. Well, you can't go take the money and pretend you don't see what's going on there. And, you know, Hong Kong is a very complicated situation, far more complicated than, you know, a 45-minute long sports podcast can handle. But the notion of, and this is all that Morley tweet was about, the notion of if you speak out against a country, you are going to be taken from your country
to that
and
country.
Transported to that country for justice. Yep. If you think speaking out against that is somehow, well, I don't know the whole situation, I don't know, then you should have shut your mouth about everything else that went on too, because there's nuances to everything. But some things are apparent. And that is, and I mean, you have to have your head in the sand to see the human rights violations or the authoritarian regime that China is. And if you, by the way, if that doesn't get your gander, go read the response that China had when to the GM's tweet. And to Silver's reaction. We don't believe that the freedom of speech allows you to talk against the China government. Well, then what's the point of freedom of speech?
Isn't that what freedom of speech is for?
You know, exactly.
We talked about this to a fairly well with Kaepernick. Dissent, at least in this country, is as patriotic as anything else. Not over there, it's not.
And Mike, if this was Lithuania, if this was Liechtenstein, we'd be out of there in 5 minutes.
That's right.
And the NBA would be saying, you know what, we're no longer going to deal with Liechtenstein. Okay, well then why is it for a country that's got, you know, a couple million people, why does it make a difference?
Because there's $1 billion on the table.
Because there's all that money out there.
Yep, you bet your ass, Mitch. And I'm telling you, nobody's covering themselves in glory, covering themselves in glory in this. Not Adam Silver, not guys like Steve Kerr, and not these players. Because these players have a lot to say about a lot of things, and we have celebrated them for that.
That's right.
Talking about social injustice and racial injustice and all the stuff. But when Joe Tsai, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, says, well, this issue is the third rail in China and Hong Kong. Well, guess what? We talked about this the other day. Race is the third rail and always has been in this country. What? Are we going to stop talking about it because it's unpleasant?
Exactly. Well put, Mike. I want to see what happens when those teams come back.
Oh, baby. Oh, Mitch, you're 100% right. All right, now, enough of this political talk. Back to the fun and games.
Back to sports. Back to the field.
All right, we have two very interesting college football games. Do you agree? There's some other games, but, I mean, I don't think Alabama's going to lose Texas A&M. Florida, LSU, Mitch, doesn't it feel like a blast from the past? Death Valley and all this stuff. Florida is on the rise. You've heard me talk. Dan Mullen is a great coach. They are doing it with a backup quarterback. And, Mitch, how much do you love listening to Ed Orgeron, the LSU coach? I love that guy. I love him.
Well, it's Baton Rouge is a damn tough place to play. And I am amazed that Florida is able to do this with a backup quarterback and what they've been able to do. So this is a really important game, especially given the rest of Florida's schedule and who they're going to have to play. So I'm glad, you know, because honestly, there really haven't been any games to watch in college football.
No, this is a good one. No, right? Bitch, LSU has a quarterback. Joe Burrow is good.
They can actually throw the ball around. A lot of people talking about him for a Heisman. He's been unbelievable. He was at Ohio State a few years ago and trying to, you know, he's going up against Dwayne Haskins, and now here, you know, another transfer, and now here he is doing magic.
Now, do we have to apply the album rule to this game and think that maybe the only thing that will separate these two teams is where the game is being played?
I think in college football, where the game is being played is very, very important. Yeah. And much more so than in the pros.
This is as tough a place to play, right? This is
Gators
as tough a place.
Have given up 6 touchdowns in 6 games. That's not a lot of scoring, you know. So I like it. I think it's a great game, and I love Oklahoma, Texas. First of all, it's obviously got a great tradition, but secondly, look at last year. You know, they had to play each other twice in order to prove who was the, and so that means, you know, Oklahoma's number 6 now, Texas is number 11. That means Texas could win and Oklahoma could get another shot at them, and then they could reverse positions again. But it's going to be to watch Oklahoma do this now with Jalen Hurts is going to be fun, because it's like, you know, taking somebody from the National League over to the American League, or taking somebody from, you know, taking Messi over from overseas and having him play in America. So now you're taking a guy out of the SEC and you're putting him into this conference, into this series, into this history. And Texas, you know, Texas is pretty good. And again, it's at Texas. Yeah. Their chances are all right.
All right. Let me ask you one. Before we get to pro football, I wanted to ask you this, and I meant to ask you this before we started today. How do you feel about the ability that players, when their team season goes south, you know, and this is the era now where if you lose your starting quarterback job, you go play somewhere else. Okay, we've got free agency for star college football quarterback. How about this redshirt thing, Mitch? I mean, is this going to start a flood of people? My team's 0-4. This is the cutoff point. If I redshirt now, I keep all of my eligibility. Is that a good thing for college football?
No, I don't think it is at all. And, you know, redshirting is... It's an odd thing, you know.
I love that expression. We still use that expression.
Yeah, we still use it. It's been used and abused for years as a way of hiding players, as a way of. I mean, the whole idea of it was not bad in that you get a kid who maybe gets hurt early on in a practice or preseason, and so you can redshirt him so the kid doesn't lose his years of eligibility with an injury. That's when redshirting is properly used. When it started to be improperly used was when, okay, we got 3 quarterbacks that we recruited because we're greedy and we want to make sure we recruit all 3 5-star quarterbacks this year. We're not going to let any other team have them. But, you know, in practice, it looks like, you know, a junior 5-star guy and senior 5-star guy are probably going to be our 2 starters. So let's redshirt the freshman 5-star guy or the sophomore 5-star guy, even though he was here last year. Now we're going to put him on a redshirt because we want to save him for later. That's what it is. So that's when they started to mutate the redshirt rule. And now this notion that you can actually get into the season X number of games and then decide, let's give up on the season and let's save ourselves for another year is an absolute abuse of what the concept of redshirting was.
But I'm telling you, it's going to become a very big issue, and they may look at changing the rules because, again, you know, the idea of being a team player, and you're trying to get to the pros, you're trying to give yourself the best chance to earn a living in this sport, but man, oh man, it's like, okay, we're 0-4, I don't want to play anymore. I don't. Yeah. I could get it hurt, and so let's. I'm going to pack it in and revisit next year. Right. Even Little League doesn't work that way.
No, and yet, you know, there are some coaches that support it because they privately are also sort of saying, well, you know, I want to have that guy around for next year so I don't get fired. So you got a lot of people working at odds. And all of this, I think, Mike, it sort of stemmed inside the volcano from coaches and their money and their ability to jump.
Yes.
And once that started happening and they really started doing it with regularity, you know, the fact that the players don't get paid already, the one currency that they can sort of do within the current rules without having to change Title IX is their mobility,
yep.
Right? Their currency is now their mobility, their ability to transfer. And boy, have they taken advantage of that transfer portal and this, say, okay, you're not going to pay me, and I'm here basically, you know, this is a training academy to get me to the
gun.
NFL,
yep.
And you are not training me, so I am going to exercise the one currency I have and cash in my chips and go someplace else to get trained better for the next level.
Yep.
And it's hard to argue about that when you've got coaches jumping. Now, I had this argument, interestingly, with Tom Izzo in college basketball. Just the other day, came on the radio program I do. And I love Tom. And I wouldn't really call it an argument like we were mad at one another. But when I brought this up, he said, yeah, Mitch, but he said, you know how long I've been doing this job before I got to this kind of money and before I got to this kind of status that somebody wants me. Now, that was the defense. He said, you know, the coaches have been at this for many years. So I came back and I said to him, well, what about the 29-year-old hot college coach who everybody wants to have, who jumps from one school to another, to another, to another? And then the conversation kind of went sideways and we went on to something else. But I think that's how some of the coaches look at it. It's like, well, you know, I've been at this. These are kids. They're here for 1 year, you know, and they're already dictating the fates of the program. I've been here for 25 years. I've been at my career for 35, 40 years. If I've earned the right then to earn this money or to switch around and jump jobs. I don't know if you buy that or if anybody buys that, but I hadn't heard that kind of stated that way before.
No, it's fine. I don't have any. We never begrudge anybody making what they can make in big time sports. Okay, but these kids, the stakes are different for them because they are looking at the rest of their lives. They are looking to maximize their talent. And again, we've gone back over this. I understand the value of the Tom Izzos, but you know what? If the players aren't good, Mitch, then he's a jockey without a horse. Okay, and that's the reality situation. All right, let's go to pro football because this is one of those weekends of the year where one of the best games of the weekend involves Mitch's Detroit Lions, yeah, who go to Lambeau on Monday night to play the Packers. And yes, it's a tough road game, and yes, they're not incredibly successful up there, but they can really change the narrative of just the way people look at them if they win this game Monday night.
They'd be in first place.
Yep.
In the very tough NFC North, if they were to win that game. And that's not wasted on the Lions, who are coming off a bye week and hopefully have gotten some of their guys healthier. And they have had recent success against Green Bay. Some of it has been late in the year when, you know, December games, when, you know, the fates have kind of already been cast. But they're not afraid to play in Lambeau anymore. There was a ridiculously long streak where the Lions didn't win in Lambeau for like 150 years. But then they broke that, and they've broken it a number of times since. And it's usually a tough matchup. And they, you know, they know each other very, very well. This year's Green Bay team is different. You know, they got a defense, and obviously they got a running game in Aaron Jones with a guy who they found. I still can't believe this is the kind of stuff that drives Detroit fans crazy. Like, he was a fifth round draft pick,
yep,
for them in 2017, just sitting on their roster. And now all of a sudden he's a superstar, you know, or I don't want to say superstar, but he's had a great season so far.
Yeah, really important.
And when Aaron Rodgers has a running game, he's a whole different breed of animal. We'll have an opportunity to talk about that more on Monday. A couple of games on the weekend that interest me before Monday: San Francisco against the Rams. If I told you, you know, at the beginning of the year, okay, the Rams are going to be playing the 49ers, and one of the teams is going to be 3-2, one of the teams is going to be 4-0. Right?
Yep.
I mean, no, you know, they are in the same division. And if San Francisco wins this game and goes to 5-0 while LA goes to 3-3, that's a pretty significant lead already for a team that nobody really talked about, the San Francisco 49ers. They were probably the, if you measured wealth in volume of conversation, they were homeless. You know, nobody talked about the 49ers at the beginning of the year.
And Rams 49ers, Mitch, it's just talk about a blast from the past game. This is a blast from the past game. This is really fun. This is this is the old days when they were always the two best teams out there. Okay, before the rise of the Seahawks right. and everything else. And you know what we did? We just forgot how good they had looked under Garoppolo because he got hurt so quickly. The next year, and obviously. He has been a franchise-altering player. And we got to give all props. You know, a lot of guys go from the broadcast booth to thinking they can be executives in football. John Lynch has done a hell of a job with the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah. And you're so right about Garoppolo. And look, he's not the single reason that they're 4-0.
No.
They have a very solid team all the way around.
Bosa is some player.
Oh, my God. Every player named Bosa, apparently. If they've got another little kid brother who's in junior high, I'd be drafting him already. But, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo is such an interesting story because he had, what, 7 games? And then he got that big contract. And, you know, why did the Patriots ever let him go? There was whole that controversy about was that Belichick standing up to his owner? Or was that at Tom Brady's request? Or what? And then he goes out there and everybody expects, okay, let's see what he can do with the 49ers. And before he even gets a blink, he's gone for the year. And it was like, oh, well, that was a big ho-hum. Well, I'm sure it wasn't to Jimmy Garoppolo. Right, I'm sure he was waiting for his, it's like a Broadway opening that they had a fire in the theater and everybody forgot about it. And it took him a year to rebuild the theater. And now that same show that everybody was anticipating gets off to a 4-0 start. I'm impressed with them. Beating Cleveland is not that big a deal, but the way they beat Cleveland, you like to say they threw him down a flight of steps.
Yeah.
That was a flight of steps. And, I'm looking forward to that game. Also looking forward to the two games, Minnesota, Philadelphia,
yep.
because both of them are sort of at a crossroads in terms of, you know, kind of gathering themselves and trying to go for some kind of
might be run. A bigger game for the team that loses it than the team that wins.
That's
it.
Right. That's right. And Houston, Kansas City, which is just forget the records. I want to see Patrick Mahomes. First of all, he's hurt, and so that we may not be seeing the Patrick Mahomes that we are used to seeing. But I really want to see how they take on that defense. And obviously, Houston's quarterback is having a year of years. Oh my God!
And
I
Mitch,
mean, what was the last one? 5-6 touchdowns in that
400 yards passing, 5 touchdowns. But Mitch, do yourself a favor and go to the internet. And look at these tutorials that Deshaun gives about defenses. And it started with a guy asking him, well, do you think you should have thrown the ball down the field more? And Deshaun quietly said, well, listen, they were in a cover 2, then they shifted to a cover 6, and then the linebacker pinched. And it sounded like a beautiful mind, you know?
Yeah, wow.
And then he did it again after the game on Sunday. One last thing before we get to parting shots, okay? Talking about Jimmy Garoppolo. If you don't think Bill Belichick can pick players, look at who the guys he got that are no longer backups to Brady, what they're doing this year. Jacoby Brissett and Jimmy Garoppolo, who have a combined record of 7-2. And so this guy has an eye for talent. He doesn't always hold on to it, but he has an eye for talent. All right,
well, he doesn't have to hold on to it when he knows he's got an eye for talent because he can let it go and go find some more talent.
Go find another guy. All right, it's time for our parting shots, and I will lead off today because Mitch is going to like this one.
Now, parting shots.
In case you missed it, Mr. Album, a kid on the Cardinals posted a video of the let's say Churchillian speech Cardinals manager Mike Schilt gave to his team after the beating they gave the Braves on Wednesday. Quote, "The Braves started some blank. We finished that blank," Schilt said, "and that's how we roll. No one blanks with us ever. Now, I don't give a blank who we play. We're going to blank them up. We're going to take it right to them the whole blanking way. We're going to kick their blanking ass." And you know something? In a world where everybody is scared to death to say something that might offend somebody, I kind of loved it. and it reminded me of a famous pregame speech Tommy Lasorda once gave on a Sunday morning at Wrigley Field when the Dodgers were about to be swept by a bad Cubs team. It went on a while because that's the way my friend Tommy can roll. Blank this and blank that, and it finally ended with Tommy yelling, "You know why they want to blanking beat us? Because we're the Los Angeles blanking Dodgers." Then Tommy, bless his heart, paused, smiled, and said, "Chapel in 10 minutes.
Richard Sherman is no shrinking violet. He says what he wants to say, no matter the circumstance. That rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but I can't find fault with speaking your mind, unless, of course, you're speaking a lie, which is what Sherman did by blasting Baker Mayfield for not shaking his hand during the opening coin toss of the 49ers-Cleveland game Monday night. He called it, quote, Bush League. He said Mayfield needed to, quote, grow up and more. He really went off on him. Problem was, when you watch the tape, it's perfectly clear that Mayfield shook Sherman's hand. When the tape was pointed out to Sherman, he said, "My bad," and admitted he owed Mayfield an apology and said he would likely call him or something. But later on social media, he complained about people making such a big deal about it. Sherman can't have it both ways. If you don't want people to make a big deal over something, don't go to Twitter complaining about it as if your very manhood was challenged. Yeah. Sherman should have apologized to Mayfield with the same passion via social media that he falsely attacked him. Not said, "I'll give him a call, my bad," or my favorite defense, quote, "Sometimes you remember things a little different than it happened." Wow. In that case, maybe Sherman thinks his team actually won that Super Bowl 5 years ago against the Patriots. That'll do it for today's program. Think back on that one. That'll do it for today's Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Thursday, so we'll be back after a big football and baseball weekend to talk about that. You can get this podcast anywhere you get popular podcasts, on Apple and Stitcher and Spotify and Pandora. And if you like what you heard, leave us a comment. If you didn't, leave us 2 comments so we can do it better. Until we see you on Monday, on behalf of Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great weekend.